Here you go.
Okay, so I'll continue. Yeah, so my friend's name is Brian Gordon, and it was a hot summer day. I was living up at Yonge and Sinclair, and I was walking north on Yonge Street, north of Sinclair, and I looked up, I was carrying groceries, and when I looked up, there was this person wearing the tiniest little shorts I had ever seen, and a very tight tank top, who was just hurtling at a rapid speed down the sidewalk on roller skates. And this person almost ran into me, a brown man. And I just jumped out of the way in time, and I turned around and I yelled at him. And I said, "What the hell do you think you're doing? Watch where you're going." I didn't know who this person was. I went home, and that night I was invited out to a party at a friend's place. And I went to the party, and when I walked in the door, who did I see? The first person that I saw when I walked in the door was this man on roller who almost ran me down on his roller skates. And I went up to him and I said, "What did you think you were doing? You almost killed me on Yonge Street." And he said to me, "Oh, you're a Trini." That's how he responded. And I said, "Yeah, and oh, so are you." And we immediately started chatting, and it turned out that his parents knew my parents. So it was really interesting. We became very fast friends, and Brian turned out that he was running a landscape business, but he was also a party boy, and I was a party girl, so we started going out to the different gay bars together. We both loved disco music. So he tried to teach me to roller skate. That wasn't happening. But I ended up working with him in the landscaping business because I was out of work at that point in my life. And the things that happened to us in that landscaping business just, you know, it just reinforced racism for us. He was getting really big jobs in Forest Hill, those huge houses, and up at Yonge and Lawrence was another area where we were working. And people wouldn't even let us use the bathrooms. And we were out there working in their backyards and cutting grass and, you know, putting in gardens, and wouldn't even let us use the bathrooms. But we became fast friends. And then I started noticing that Brian was, there was something wrong with his skin. And we were talking about it, and he said, no, it's just I'm out in the sun too much. And then his physicality started changing, and he started getting slowing down and started feeling not as energetic. And he actually had to stop roller skating, which was his pride and joy, was being able to be out there on his roller skates. This is something I will always remember. Brian on his roller skates. And over the course of about, I would say, less than a year, we realized that he had he was HIV positive. And he had a brother, William. And his mother, William was living in Vancouver. And his mother came up and was living with William to take care of William, because William was also HIV positive. William was older than Brian, and William died. And then his mother came to Toronto to live with Brian, to take care of Brian. And it broke my heart to see the change that just happened so quickly, but he was still the same human being. And I remember that, you know, we set up a care circle to support him with meals and food, and to make sure there was always somebody there 24/7. And also his mother was in her late 70s at the time, so just to give her some relief. But when people found out that I was part of a care circle taking care of somebody who was HIV positive, nobody wanted to date me. Nobody wanted to even have sex with me, to be physically intimate, because they were afraid that I would you know, I was positive and then I would pass it on to them, which was a lot of crap. And just the ignorance, you know, the sheer ignorance. And what really was upsetting for us dykes and lesbians of color who were taking care of our gay male friends of color was that there was this story that was out there and still continues to be out there that, you know, oh, the white lesbians and dykes took care of all these gay men. Well, gay men of color were left basically to die on their own. And I'm sure some people have heard me say this. Over the course of 3 months, 7 of my gay male friends of color died. And it was just funeral after funeral. It was, you know, it was upsetting and it was hard for me, but I can't imagine how much harder it was for their families, because they were shunned by their families. They were disowned by their families. Brian and William were lucky that their mother, their father came and went, but it was their mother who stayed. And just, can you imagine both your children, those were their only two children, dying of AIDS? And back then, from Trinidad, you had no clue what that was. And then we tried to get him into Casey House. Eventually, we did get him into Casey House, but that was a fight. It was a huge fight, because he was a man of color. But once we got him in, you know, we were advocating for him, for his care. And again, our care support continued while he was there, because they were short-staffed. But one of the fondest memories I have, and Brian had said to me, I want you to let people know that I did this. So whenever I can, I tell the story. So I took Brian to the funeral home, because he wanted to plan his funeral. And we went in and we were talking to the funeral director, and Brian chose his casket and he got into the casket and he told, if he had the music, he wanted soca music and steel pan music. He planned the menu. He wanted doubles and roti at whatever ceremony we had afterwards. But he got into the casket and he said to the funeral director, okay, play the tape, because we made a mixtape. Remember back in the day, mixtapes. And we closed the lid of the casket because he wanted to be able to hear the music. He says, I do not want people to remember me with sorrow and sadness. I want people to remember that I lived a good life. And we planned that he would go and visit his friends who were in Southern Ontario. And he was also an artist. And he designed gardens. That was his artistry, designing gardens. And I took him to various people. And it turns out that a lot of the people that I took him to knew my grandparents, and because Brian was older than me, his parents were also older, and his parents also knew my grandfather. So there were all these connections that happened between us, you know, here. And again, this random thing that happened to me, this man almost knocked me over on roller skates, and I end up being with him, you know, at almost at the end of his life. And I kept... So we did this thing with the funeral director, who was saying, what do you mean you want to hear the music? You're going to be dead.
And I love that.
So the music played, and Brian, and that's why I'm going to wrap this up. Brian ended up at Casey House, and he had a birthday while he was at Casey House, and there was this big party for him. I was trying to find the pictures, but I couldn't find them in time for tonight. And anyway, shortly thereafter, I was checked. So Casey House never called us. We had to keep calling them to find out what his condition was. And you weren't allowed to just go and visit. Everything had to be by appointment. And one afternoon, I just had this feeling that I had to go and see him. So I ducked out of work and I took TTC over and I went to see him at Casey House. And I took him coconut water, because I was just, he couldn't really eat anything after a certain point of time. And he drank the coconut water, and I said, I was holding him and kissing him and hugging him, because he just wanted to be held and to be touched and to just feel that warmth. Because one of the things that was, and my other friends said the same thing, they were not feeling warm. They just kept feeling cold and they wanted to be held. So I was holding him and he said, "I think this might be it. Tell the others." And there were no cell phones back then, so I had to wait until I got back to the office and I called up my other friends who were part of the support circle, and by the time they went, he had died. So I was lucky to have had, that half an hour with him that I, left work just because I just had that feeling. And I was just glad that he had coconut water because that was important. And I was there and I was able to hold him. But again, he said, "I don't want people to remember me with sadness and sorrow. I want people to remember me being alive and active and roller skating in the shortest shorts and the tiniest tank top. Brian Gordon from Trinidad. I want him to be remembered that way, and so will he. Thank you." Then you're going to put a
Thank
date.
you.
I did say
Yes.
1992.
Perfect. And thank you for that. I'll stop it here. Make sure I save it.